This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Try to encourage you, inshallah, to dedicate yourself during Ramadan and motivate you, inshallah, to make this the best year of Ramadan of your life. But I think aside to that, we also have to make sure we understand the fiqh of it, meaning what is acceptable, what's allowed, what's not, and how to do things in certain ways. So I think that's I think it's worthy of at least sharing that, because I get a lot of questions right before Ramadan. And honestly, doing this session last year, it significantly brought down the number of questions I had to answer. So I actually saw the just data wise, I saw a 60% decrease of the number of questions I was getting regarding like fasting and stuff. So hopefully this year it'll be even better, and I won't get any questions at all. But we'll try to go through the basics and the most common or frequently asked questions regarding fasting and aspects of Taraweeh and prayer and other stuff. And of course, as Brother Khalid had shared, Jazallah khairan, Amu Bilal and his family, Barakallah fihim, overwhelmed us and graced us with an extension of this space, which is just beautiful. So beautiful, I'm not even sure if I'm going to let anyone go into it for a while, but it's just a beautiful space. And inshallah, it'll be utilized for everyone here to enjoy and throughout Ramadan and after Ramadan, inshallah, as well. And you can just make dua for him, really. He doesn't want anything. He just wants people to make dua for him and his family. So please do that. And that's the least we can do for someone who's being kind and generous and helpful. And I know that I do all the time. And barakallah fi wa fi ahlu fi ayalu inshallah wa fi malihi. Ja'alaha lahu sadaqatan jariya yajiduha yawm al-qiyamati tantadhiruhu ala abwab jannatin na'im inshallah. Allahumma ameen. And we'll talk about the fiqh regarding that space as well. I didn't put that on the slides because I wasn't sure we're going to have it for Ramadan. I didn't want to assume. But now that we do, I have to talk about the fiqh about it, because we're going to still be praying in here. So I have to explain to you how this works, inshallah. So we'll go through I'm trying to get through all the slides before Isha. So number one, the most important thing, there's no talk that will ever occur Islamically that can start with anything aside from starting with niyyah. We always have to start by talking about intentions. It is the most important piece of any Islamic act of worship by far. No book of hadith will start without the hadith innama al-a'malu bin-niyyat, and no scholar will begin a book of fiqh or tazkiyah or seerah or aqeed or anything without talking about the importance of sincerity and perfecting your intention towards what you're doing for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it's a condition for the validity of fasting. For the majority of scholars, they don't need you to make the intention every single night. The Shafi'iyya do, specifically, they have that as a very important piece of their madhab, meaning you have to make the intention for fasting every night before the day. Then you have a variety of different opinions that are much more loose, and then you have the loose, most lenient opinion with the opinion of Imam Malik radiallahu anhu, the Malikiyya, that say you just make the intention at the beginning of Ramadan once for fasting the 30 days, and then you're good. So then we have everything in between where they don't require it every night, but they require it before Fajr or something like that. So what you need to know about this? What you need to know is that you have to know that you're fasting. So you can't wake up at 8 o'clock a.m. and have no recollection that today is Ramadan, and someone remind you that, oh, by the way, it's Ramadan, you should be fasting. Like, okay, I'll say, no, that doesn't work. You have to know that it's Ramadan, that you're fasting. If you eat suhoor, then that's it. You've made the intention of fasting. If you just by the merit of having suhoor or praying fajr that morning. If you are aware that tomorrow is Ramadan and that you have awareness of that at nighttime, you just know that tomorrow is Ramadan, so you're fasting, that's enough. You don't actually have to lock it down in that manner. But you can't be someone who's so distracted that you forgot altogether that it's Ramadan, and then sometime in the middle of the day someone reminds you it's Ramadan and you'll go, yeah, I'll fast then. That doesn't work. You have to you have to know what you're doing. This is a fard, and this is not an issue of sunnah. Now, for example, outside of Ramadan, if I wake up at 9 and I decide, you know what, it's a short December day, Maghrib is at 4:15, and I'm not too hungry anyways. I had a heavy sushi dinner last night or something, and I want to fast, you're good to do that. You can just start at 9. But in Ramadan, you can't. So Ramadan, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know beforehand that you're fasting. So Imam Malik is happy with one intention. Imam Shafi'i wants it every single night, and the other scholars are somewhere in between. What's important is just at least you're aware. That the awareness, and if you have suhoor every morning and pray fajr, then that's more than enough, because you know what you're doing and you know what's going on. I'll move on. That's all I need to tell you. So here's a general rule regarding fasting. If you just know this general rule, then the concept of siyam will be easy for you. So anything that is taken intentionally, and provides the body with medical the medical definition of nourishment, or its equivalent, invalidates your fasting. So anything that you take intentionally that provides you with what medicine or biology calls nourishment or anything equivalent to that, that is what will invalidate your fasting. And all the and that of course is this is of course a qa'ida fiqhiyya. So this is how Islam works. You have the constitution, which is usul al-fiqh, and then you have law, which is al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya, and then you have fiqh, which are the verdicts. Today I'm sharing with you the verdicts, but that here is law. This is the rule that we're going, everything I explain to you comes back to this rule. If you intentionally take something that provides your body with any form of nourishment, you invalidate your fast. As simple as that. So that means we have to talk about something being intentional. It has to provide the body with nourishment. It can't be something that's not providing the body with nourishment, or its equivalent, obviously. So let's go on. So actions that invalidate your fast. Number one, obviously, eating and drinking intentionally. So the moment that you eat and drink intentionally, you invalidate your fasting. We'll talk about doing it forgetfully in a moment, but that's the first one. Number one, any form of sexual intercourse or its equivalent, anything that's similar to it, it will also invalidate your fasting. Intentional vomiting. So these are important. You should know these. We'll share them on the WhatsApp group, and if you're not a part of that, take a picture of them. They're important. These are the stuff that will invalidate your fast. Know them well. Really, there's nothing outside of these that will invalidate your fast that you will be subject to for the majority of human beings, unless you're doing something really weird in Ramadan, like hiking in the Himalayas or something. This is all you need to know. So if you intentionally vomit, meaning you induce vomiting by putting your hand into your mouth a couple of times trying to bring it out, then you invalidate your fast. If it's not intentional, it's different. Parenteral nourishment. Parenteral meaning you're not taking it through the mouth, you're taking it through IV. So if this is called medically TPN. So if you're taking anything that is nourishing your body, so if you go to Emerge for some reason, and they hook up a normal saline IV to an IV, then that doesn't that invalidates your fasting, because that's a form of nourishment. They're putting in water into your body, they're putting nourishment into your body, so you invalidate your fasting. So any form of IV nourishment will invalidate your fast. And before you ask questions, let me continue, because I've breaking it down, so most of the questions, inshallah, will be covered. Smoking. Doesn't matter what type of smoking. Tobacco, hashish, shisha, you know, e-cigarette, I don't care what it is, any form of inhaling smoke will invalidate your fast, okay? So that's not acceptable. And the last one is hayd or nafas. So a lady who's on her period, or a lady who's in her postpartum period after she gave birth, but the 40 days afterwards. So they're not allowed to fast during that period of time. And we'll talk about what they're going to do in a moment. So this is what invalidates fasting. These are the six major categories that matter, that you will face as a human being living in the world today. You don't really need much more. You don't really need to know more than these. That's pretty much all you need to know. So actions that don't invalidate fasting, because these are the questions that come on a daily basis. So number one, brushing your teeth. It does not invalidate your fast. Unless somehow you are someone who eats the toothpaste, or you swallow everything that you use to brush your teeth with, then you invalidate your fast. But if you're not doing that, then it doesn't invalidate your fast. So you're allowed to use a toothpaste on the teeth, and then spit out whatever water after you rinse your mouth. That doesn't invalidate your fast. If you are swallowing the water or swallowing the toothpaste, then yes, you're breaking your fast, and that's kind of pretty simple. But in general, brushing your teeth does not. Using a miswak is probably better. That's the sunnah of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam in Ramadan. Some scholars didn't like using sunnah at certain times, and then they went back on that opinion, like Imam Nawawi, and they said, use it any time in Ramadan, it's totally acceptable. So if you want to buy a miswak and just use it throughout Ramadan, that's probably even a safer option. But if you're brushing your teeth and that's your habit, you're fine to get up in the morning, brush your teeth and go to work. You're not going to invalidate your fast unless you're eating or drinking the toothpaste or the water that's with it. After that, eating or drinking forgetfully. So if you eat and drink and you forgot, so this is important. I'm not saying that you forgot you were fat. When I talked about intention, I say that you didn't even know it was Ramadan. You completely forgot it was Ramadan, wasn't even aware someone, that's how absent-minded you are out of it. That's a problem for your fasting to be valid, because you don't even know what's happening. But if you know you're fasting, but then for some reason in the middle of the day, you just forgot, you picked up your water bottle, you go like that, you're fine. Your fasting continues. You could do more than that. I have received some of the most bizarre questions in the world regarding this one. like the most interesting questions I've ever received have been something, some of them I actually hold on to them. Like I screenshot the question and just keep it for my archive. Because someone will tell me, I forgot and I went to this place and I had lunch and tea, and then this person went into a restaurant, sat down, ordered a meal, waited for it, ate the meal, ordered tea afterwards, and then remembered they were fasting, and somehow they want me to tell. So I'm like, well, if you forgot, and that is that you actually forgot, then you're valid as fasting, but you have dementia, and you need to go see a geriatric psychiatrist or someone to help you, because that is not normal. So some of the weirdest stuff will come from this. Don't ask a sheikh. You just have to answer the following question. Did you, at the moment that you ate or drank, were in the state of forgetting that it was Ramadan or that you were fasting? If you had forgotten, then that's fine. Even if you end up like eating a sandwich or going beyond like what is normal. But the moment you remember, if the food is even like, almost fully chewed in your mouth, you're not allowed to swallow it. If you swallow it, you lose your fasting. You have to spit it out. All right? So it's not very obviously, it's not nice and it's not beautiful, but that's what you have to do. The moment you remember you're fasting, you're not allowed to swallow anything. You have to get it out of your mouth, whatever it is. But what do you do if someone is eating or drinking in front of you and they're forgetting? What do? You remind them? No. So you don't remind them. If someone in front of you is eating or drinking forgetfully, you leave them alone. You let them finish what they're doing. Don't remind them as they are about to swallow and then cause them to choke on the thing they're doing. And then, no, don't do that. Leave them alone and then remind them once they're done. Like remind them once they've swallowed the full anything that's in their mouth. If they Allah, why? Because as the Prophet ﷺ explained, فَإِنَّمَا أَطْعَمَهُ اللَّهُ وَسَقَاهُ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has granted them like an ease in Ramadan. This is a gift from Allah. So don't intervene. If someone is, they're fasting and they just forgot and they're holding the water bottle and they're drinking, let them finish let them swallow the gulp of water, and then after that you can remind them, but don't do it in the midst of their eating. Okay. Unintentional sexual pleasure of any sort, meaning if you're sleeping, you wake up and it's a wet dream, then that does not invalidate your fasting. So if you sleep after Fajr and you wake up, and that doesn't invalidate your fast. If it happened during your sleep and it was not intentional, it does not invalidate your fast. And you have to obviously shower so that you can pray, you have to do ghusl so that you can pray your salawat, but your fasting is fine. It's when it's intentional, whether it's sexual intercourse or its equivalent, that will invalidate your fast, and that's a big problem, because that's the worst way to invalidate your fasting. So be very careful of that, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. We'll talk about the expiation that's required with that. So intramuscular or subcutaneous medical injections that are non-nourishing. So when you get an injection in the muscle, so intramuscular, or you get it under the skin where they pick up the skin and they put it the needle under. If it's not nourishing, then it does not break your fast. If it's not something that's going to offer nourishment. And there's a lot of examples like that are similar to that. I think I talked about this last year and I got a lot of questions. Insulin is usually also subcutaneous. And if insulin does not, for the majority of scholars today at least, don't see that to invalidate your fasting. However, people who have type 1 or type 2 diabetes that are insulin dependent have to be very careful whether they can fast to begin with. Meaning they have to actually speak to their endocrinologist or their family physician who's following their disease to make sure that they have a disease that is stable enough to allow them to fast for 17 hours and continue to take insulin. Because sometimes if you're going to fast for a long period of time, then they actually have to adjust your medication, adjust the insulin injections so that you don't end up hypoglycemic or end up rushed to emerge because you don't have enough sugar in your blood. So that's very important. So have these discussions with your family physician and your endocrinologist. And if they tell you that you cannot go without food for a certain amount of time, then you have an appropriate excuse not to fast, and I'll explain to you what to do in a few moments. But generally speaking, intramuscular or subcutaneous injections that are not designed for nourishment. So for example, some people will take blood thinners and it'll be an injection under the skin. Sometimes you'll take vitamin B or 12 or something in the muscle. These are not nourishing. These don't offer any form of nourishment to the body. This is just closing in gaps within your electrolytes and maybe other aspects of your health. So it does not break your fast. And if you have questions at the end, I'll offer you some time to ask questions if you have specific issues. And unintentional water swallowing after ablution. So if you're making wudu and you do madmada and you spit out the water, don't get obsessed. Don't get obsessed with whatever is left in your mouth. Don't spit out like 15 times because you're not sure if this is your saliva. Or just make madmada and spit out the water. and move on with your lovely little life. You're fine. If anything is left in and it's swallowed, that's fine. It's not a problem for your siyam. Obviously, you're not supposed to, don't intentionally spit out half and leave the half of water and then swallow it down. That's not appropriate. But I'm saying if you're a person who's reasonable and you're making wudu, you do madmada, you spit out the water in there, anything is left in the mouth with the saliva, it's not a problem if that goes down. You don't have to be extra, you don't have to be hypersensitive about this issue by spitting multiple times. Once that is thorough is more than enough to make sure that you remove the water. So these are the actions that do not invalidate fasting, for sure. These are the ones that are for sure. Meaning, these issues here, there's none to little khilaf, right? There's almost no difference of opinion among scholars to a very little group that will disagree with it. Because I'm going to talk a little bit now about things that there's difference of opinion for sure among scholars about whether it invalidates or it doesn't. But these ones here, so brushing your teeth, eating and drinking in a forgetful way, unintentional sexual pleasure, intramuscular or subcutaneous non-nourishing injections, swallowing one's, I missed that, didn't I? Okay, so swallowing one's saliva and an intentional water swallowing after ablution. So your saliva will never invalidate your fast. Even if you are gross and sit there and just allow it to fill up in your mouth and then swallow it all together, which is disgusting, but that doesn't break your fast. It's makruh, it's highly unrecommended, you should not do it, but it does not break your fast. Okay, so if you're not, let's say you didn't make wudu or anything, you didn't put any water into your body, your saliva glands will continue to make small amounts of saliva. If you don't swallow them, which is the reflex that happens on a minute basis within your body, if you decide not to do it and just let out to fill it up and then drink it, not very nice. You don't do that, please. But it does not break your fast, just to be clear. Because I'm talking about technicalities here. There's an issue. There's spirituality and doing things with ihsan, which I think everyone can kind of understand and figure out. But sometimes it's important to understand what the technicality is, where the line is drawn in terms of what invalidates and what allows you to continue to fast, because that's important. So these are the stuff that will not invalidate your fasting. Okay. So issues of difference of opinion. Here's where scholars differ heavily. The first two I think are fine, the next two I don't. That's my opinion on the matter. But you're welcome to do your own research on the issue, and if there's an imam that you trust and an alim that gave an opinion that you're willing to go for, I have no problem. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of difference of opinion on these issues, and I'll tell you the first two I agree that they don't, and the seconds I think they do. So number one, inhalers. So if you have asthma, or if you have COPD, for example, you have any lung problem, and you have to use an inhaler, and you're breathing it into lung, then that the scholars differ on whether this invalidates your fast versus it doesn't. And I tend to take the opinion that it does not invalidate your fasting because it's not nourishing. It's going through the sabi lane, but it's not actually nourishing, and it's a medical need. And it's not actually offering anything to the body. It's not going down the esophagus. So when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks, or when the Prophet alayhi salam talks about things going through the sabi lane, they're talking about things going down. The esophagus is where you're going to be nourished. Going down the trachea offers no nourishment at all. Actually, going down the trachea will cause you to choke and cough things up and make you very uncomfortable. Try shoving food down your trachea and see how happy you're going to be. It does not work at all. So the inhalers are there because you're struggling with breathing. So I tend to take the opinion that that's fine. However, there are scholars who don't agree with that. So you have to kind of do your research. But this is my recommendation. I think it's fine. So if you're an asthmatic, you have asthma and you're using like a Ventolin, or if you have COPD using Symbicort or something like that, then your fast is fine. Even the ones that have prednisone in them, so even the ones that have some degree of prednisone in them, that doesn't, in my opinion, does not invalidate your fast. Again, scholars are kind of divided here, 60-40 on this issue. Number two, ear and eye drops. Again, an issue of difference of opinion among scholars. They don't fully agree on this one. I would say probably the 60-40 breakdown amongst the madhahib is in the favor of it invalidating, but I don't see it to invalidate. I think because again, the actual substance that's being taken is not nourishing. There's nothing in it to nourish, and is even though it by mistake it can go down, like through the eustachian tube, can find its way down the throat. Well, it's similar in my opinion to ablution. When you make ablution, you make wudu, and a little bit of water is stuck in there by mistake, you're not actually required to slam it. You keep on spitting out until you have no saliva left in your mouth. So a small degree of error or a margin of error is allowed within wudu. So I think for eye drops and ear drops that are actually required for infections or inflammations or other reasons, I think it slides. Again, as I explained, an issue of difference of opinion. So if you Google this and you find someone else saying something different, I know that. Don't send me the Don't send me the YouTube. I know that people don't agree with this. I will lie, I know. And that's why I'm telling you this difference of opinion here. So you're very welcome as a Muslim to listen to the arguments and make your decision based on what makes sense to you. And that's your obligation. And I will give you my recommendations because that's my job. I'm supposed to do that for you. Number three, so non-nourishing IV infusions or injections. So sometimes they can give you, through the IV, things that are not nourishing, like it's not normal saline or TPN or nourishment that comes with the IV. They can give other stuff that don't necessarily, for example, they can push digoxin, which is like a heart medication for heart rate. Scholars differ on this a lot. I tend to see this to be invalidating of your, the moment they open an IV and push anything into it, wallahu a'lam, the way I see it, the amount of fluid that is within the capsule that is being put in is offering some degree of nourishment. It's expanding the vasculature of your body, which actually reflects in a way that gives you a bit of nourishment. So my opinion on this matter is that it does invalidate your fasting. There are scholars who will say that it doesn't. So again, this is something that you have to decide about if you are stuck with this problem. Like some people, they go to get, for example, iron IV infusions, or obviously blood transfusions invalidate your fast like immediately. That's nourishing. That's very nourishing. I'm talking about non-nourishing IV infusions or injections. So you have to ask the physician what you're being given. Is this nourishing? And then if you want to look for fatawa or scholars who think that it's okay so you can continue your fasting, you're welcome to do so. I side on this. I lean towards the side that this is not, that this will invalidate your fast. Okay? And then suppositories. Again, a difference of opinion because of what we know today about the rectal mucosa and what does it absorb and how does it absorb and what it absorbs, where does it actually go and what does it actually do? So we know much more today in medicine than we did before. So some scholars will say that it's not, but I, Allahu a'lam, the way I see it is that suppositories will go directly to the venous system within your body and again, offer some expansion to that because that's how basically the vasculature system works for that part of the body. So I see suppositories to also be invalidating of fasting. And again, the Prophet ﷺ used the word sabilin. So anything going through the esophagus or going through the rectum is probably going to invalidate your fast. But there are scholars who side on, who will argue that suppositories, like for example, if someone has a fever, if they get a suppository, some scholars will argue that it doesn't break their fast. Some of them will talk about enemas, especially if someone's constipated and they use that to kind of move things along. They'll argue it doesn't cause invalidate your fasting. I disagree. So for these four, if you are stuck with any of them, meaning if you're faced with one of these four, then you should do a little bit of kind of research yourself and listen to some of the arguments and read so that you're educated on the decision, the opinion that you're going to commit to. My recommendations on this is the first two, they're fine. So inhalers, eye and eardrops, they're okay. But then anything, the moment they open an IV for you, you go to a hospital, they open an IV, whatever they put in there, invalidates your fast. That's my opinion on it. And then suppositories in general will also do. When you're using a bidet to clean, that doesn't invalidate your fast. That's another thing that someone brought to me, my attention. And they were told, they were very fully convinced that if you're using water and you're cleaning your behind after you go to the bathroom, that you have to be aware that water doesn't go inside because it'll invalidate your fast. And I don't know anyone drinking from that part of their body. I'm not aware of that actually working. I'd be very interested if that's something that's possible, where you can just kind of drink from the other side. But I don't think that's possible, so I don't believe that's an issue because Muslims would use water through Ramadan to clean that part, and this was never something that they fully, we don't have evidence to kind of support that. So Allahu a'lam, that's not a problem. But suppositories are different because they are being absorbed. We know they're being absorbed, and we know they're going into the vein system, circulation, and I just, the way I see it, if you're putting something into the circulation directly, then most likely this is offering some degree of nourishment, even if it's not fully tangible. Sorry? So blood transfusion is not this, because blood transfusion, let's go back here. This is blood transfusion, parenteral nourishment. You're getting nourishment through the IV. That's what blood transfusions are. That's basically what they are. That's like the most extreme example of it, because you're getting you're getting everything. You're getting blood. Basically, you're going to feel amazing afterwards if you don't have a reaction, obviously. But it's nourishment. So I'm talking about something that goes through the IV that is not nourishing. That's different. And they don't have it very often. I don't want to spend too much time because this doesn't happen very often. But if you're stuck with this, you should probably ask an imam directly of what to do, because there are situations. All right, so that's what invalidates, doesn't invalidate, and difference of opinion regarding invalidating your fast. All right, so what are the circumstances that allow you to break your fast on a day of Ramadan? So these are the four that you need to know. Number one, if you are ill. If you are ill, you can break your fast. If fasting harms you, I argue that you're not allowed to fast. If fasting harms your body, if it harms your health, then my argument is haram for you to fast. Because another Islamic rule, another general rule, that is like a law, Islamic law, صِحَّةُ الْأَبْدَانِ مُقَدَّمَةٌ عَلَىٰ سَلَامَةِ الْأَدِيَانِ, meaning the health of your body, the wellness of your biology, is higher on the priority list than the perfection of your rituals. So yes, when we pray salah fard, you should stand up, start the salah standing up and say Allahu Akbar. If standing up straight is going to harm you or cause you severe pain, then you do it sitting down. Even though the fard is that you stand up when you do it. And that goes for everything within the deen. Whenever you're going to compromise your health with an act of worship, you don't do the act of worship. And then you find another way to do it. So if someone is ill, someone who has, for example, chronic kidney disease, or somebody who is, la samahallah, yani being treated with chemotherapy or radiation or something for cancers, or someone who has heart disease, or someone who requires to take medications every 2 to 3 hours by mouth, then that someone should not break, yani fast and then go the period without taking their medication and then cause themselves harm. That shouldn't be the case. So illness yani is important, is a good reason to break your fast. Obviously, if you're having a bit of a fever and you feel like you're young and you feel like you can kind of stomach it, that's fine, but you're not required to. And especially if you're a bit, I get this from a lot of elderly sisters. This is the annual problem I have. So all the hajjis, all the older hajjis that want to fast and their children are not letting them, I'm always a very disappointing person to turn to. So they turn to me hoping that I'll tell them it's okay to fast, and I tell them they can't fast, and then they tell them that Sheikh is ahmar, don't listen to him again, and then they move on to another Sheikh who can tell them that they will. But I'm very specific on this issue when it comes to elderly who have diseases and comorbidities and problems, health problems, that are going to be exacerbated by fasting. You are not required to fast. So what do you do? If you can't fast, what do you do? Here's what you do. You only take in what is necessary, and you do it in a private setting. And then you enjoy the environment of fasting with everyone else. So that's what you do if you're not. And that's what a lady who has hayd and nifas does. So a lady on her period should not order lunch or dinner from Popeyes and sit down and eat at asr time in front of everybody. No, you take in whatever you need to take in. You keep yourself hydrated. You take in a little bit of food. You do it privately. And then you continue to enjoy the environment of lessening consumption and eating at Maghrib. So we're not telling these people that you can't enjoy the environment of fasting and then breaking your fast at Maghrib. I'm just saying that you shouldn't actually fast if it's going to harm your body, and that's not appropriate. So some people can't fast because they have to take medications every 4 to 6 hours. So those people, take your medications every 4 to 6 hours, take whatever small amount of food you need to make sure the medication doesn't harm you, and then don't eat until Maghrib. Again, act as if you're fasting otherwise. What do they do for the long term? I'll explain in a moment. We'll talk about how to make up for this stuff in a second. Number two, travel. If you travel, you can break your fast. You're allowed to. You don't have to. That never actually occurred to me until recently when someone asked me, and they thought they had to break their fast if they were traveling. No, you don't have to. Like if you're traveling to Toronto and back in the car, like don't break your fast. But you do have the permission to do so. So if you're traveling, the day that you travel, you can break your fast. The day back, you can break your fast, obviously. The days that you stay there, if they're under four, there is consensus amongst all scholars to break your fast. There are more. Now we go into the realm of different opinions amongst scholars. The Hanafis are okay up to 2 weeks. The Hanafis are okay up to 2 weeks of you breaking your fast if you're on travel. Other scholars are sometimes okay with even more than that. I don't recommend that you break your fasting during Ramadan unless you absolutely have to, because it's hard to make up for later and you're losing out on ajr that you don't want to miss out on. Number three, pregnancy and breastfeeding. And then number four, severe fatigue. So pregnancy and breastfeeding, a lady who is pregnant and a lady who is breastfeeding her child, she has the option to break her fast, regardless of what trimester she's in. First, second, third, doesn't make a difference. If she's pregnant, then she has the option to break her fast. And I'll explain what she has to do after that because it's different. And then same thing for if she's a breastfeeding mother. severe fatigue. This is important, not for people. This won't be important for us, wallahu a'lam, for a long time. This came up a lot 10 years ago when I first came here, when Ramadan was, you know, smack right in the middle of July. This became a problem. If you're a roofer in July, and Ramadan is then, you're fasting for 19 hours and you're under the sun. So if you have severe fatigue during your fasting, you can break your fast. Let's say someone gets up in the morning, that's the only way he can make a living. They go, and he works, and he's working the sun, he's working the fields, it's very hot, and then sometime around 4 or 5 o'clock, this person can't function anymore. They're very dehydrated, they're going to get sick, they're going to get harmed. They break their fast. So you can say, well, they know they're going to do that every day. Do they just not intend to fast? No, listen very carefully. They intend to fast every day. And then whenever they can't fast, they break it. And they obviously, as I'll explain, they'll make up for it later. But you have to make the intention to fast every day of Ramadan. You can't say, well, I know for a fact that tomorrow by 4:30, I will no longer be able to fast. Okay, I understand that. You still have to make the intention to fast that night before, like the day, the night before. You still have to make the intention. And you start the day off fasting. You make your suhoor and you fast. And once you come to the moment where you are severely fatigued, you can no longer fast, you break your fast. Where did this happen more often than here? Many Syrians refugees ended up having to go to parts of Europe. And some of them went to some of the northern Scandinavian countries. Some of them called and said, so here's the problem, Sheikh. The sun is up in the sky for an hour and a half a day. It's under the horizon for an hour and a half a day. And then it's up in the sky for over 21 hours. So what do we do? So there are different opinions there. I'm not going to go through them because they don't matter to us right now here. I don't want to go through all the evidence and the different discrepancies. But let's say that you don't want to accept other opinions. And you just want to fast based on the sun. The sun comes up, comes down. So it came up an hour later. It came down an hour later. It comes up. So you're going to fast for 21 hours. So what do you do? And these people are obviously 21 hours every day for 30 days can be very, very problematic. The body may not be able to actually put up with that. If you're a student, if you're working, it's hard. So you make the intention to fast every day. And then at any point, when you come to the point where you cannot fast any longer, you're too fatigued, you can break your fast. Okay? So this, and then you make up obviously for these days once the days are a bit more reasonable in the spring or in the fall. So memorize these four. These are the four reasons that allow you to break your fast. If you're ill, if you travel, a lady who is breastfeeding or pregnant, and someone who has severe fatigue from fasting, you're allowed to break your fast. So missed days of Ramadan must be made up after Ramadan and before the following Ramadan. My sisters don't like that piece. Most of my sisters don't like that one because most of them don't do it. And they end up adding up and then they tell me I have 70 days for the last 6 years and it's hard to make up for them. Make up for Ramadan before the next one comes. Because if you don't, there's actually a couple of issues regarding expiation, meaning you have to pay a kafara and make up for it if you do. And that's the majority of scholars, and that's what they see. So this is the rule that you'll run with. You miss a day of Ramadan, once the Ramadan's over, make it up on your time, but it has to be before the next Ramadan. If not, we'll talk about what needs to happen in a moment. So expiation, this is called the word kafara, okay? No, make sure this word is part of your vocabulary because it's important to understand Islamically. So expiation is definitely required, and I'll explain what that is in a moment, when fasting is broken with sexual intercourse and most likely with eating and drinking intentionally. So and this is obviously talking about the heavy expiation. So here's the major expiation. It's freeing a slave. You can't do that, then fasting 60 consecutive days or feeding 60 people in that order of availability. So you have to start with this order of availability. Can you free a slave person? No. Can you fast 60 days? Put your hand up if you can fast 60 days in a row. MashaAllah. Allah yiftah alik. Allah yiftah alik. Very hard. You're the first person I've met. I have yet to run into a person who had a problem with this and was able to actually come up, because this also is the expiation for other stuff as well. فَصِيَامُ شَهْرَيْنِ مُتَتَابِعَيْنِ Fasting 2 months in a row. Some scholars allow it to be 58 days because a month can be 29, but it's very difficult. So if you know... meaning your assumption of yourself, are you able to do it? If you're like, I know I won't be able to do it. I will break my fast at some point because of the fact that I travel or I get sick or my physically not strong enough or my work doesn't allow me. So some people are very much used to fasting, so they have no problem with that. But if you know that you can't do 60 days in a row, then you can move on to the sixth one, but you have to think about it that way. It's not this or this or this. It's this, then this, then this. So you have to kind of start, do that sequentially. So if you can't fast, then you have to feed 60 people. So, or feed a needy person 60 meals. So you can either or is acceptable. So just the calculation isn't that hard. You times 60 by what, 20? I said around $1,000 usually is a good, isn't that accurate or something? So I said around $1,000 is usually good enough. So up to $1,000 for a day that you break your fast via sexual intercourse. Huh? The majority of, this is all the madhahib. If a man and his wife break their fast during Ramadan via this, then they both owe this kafara. Both of them owe this kafara. They have to make up for the day, obviously, but they owe the kafara. If you break your fast by intentionally eating, well, Sheikh, you just said severe fatigue. I'm not talking about severe fatigue. I'm not talking about the fact that you could not fast anymore, so you had to leave. I'm saying that for somehow, shaitan's not around, but your nafs, you know, played a trick on you and you just got frustrated, or you just did something, you just ended up eating intentionally in Ramadan out of rage or whatever the reason may be, then the majority of scholars say that you owe this expiation, 60 miskeen, but there is a sizable amount of scholars within the madhahib that don't see that to be the case. So it's a difference of opinion in terms of breaking your fast via eating and drinking. But via sexual intercourse, there's no difference of opinion. You have to do the expiation. All right. So minor expiation. So the minor. What is the minor expiation? It's over there on the right. You see it? Feeding one person for each day. Major expiation, which I just talked about a second ago, is specific for breaking your fast via sexual intercourse or eating. If you want to be safe, and for some reason you made a really bad mistake and you ate during the day of Ramadan intentionally, you didn't forget, you weren't fatigued, you weren't ill, you have no excuse, just ate, then if you want to be safe, you make up for the day and you pay the 60 miskeen, because that's how to be safe, because there's scholars who heavily believe that you should do it, and there's others who don't. So it's something, it's most likely, but it's not 100%. But then you have something called minor expiation, which is the kafara sughra, which is where you just feed for each day a needy person, one person. Who should do this? All right. Terminally ill people. The elderly lady or the elderly gentleman I talked about who has chronic kidney disease, who is on daily treatments. Someone who has a disease that's going to cause them to have to take medications every single day of their lives. They're never going to get out of it. There's no way to stop it. Some people have neurological diseases. They have to take a medication every 6 to 8 hours. There's no way around it. If they don't take it, they can be harmed. So, and this is not going to stop at any time soon. So they're terminally ill. They don't fast. Again, you're not allowed to fast if it's going to harm you. So they don't fast and they pay a minor expiation for each day. Does that make sense? So if you're terminally ill, you just pay for each day that you missed. So Ramadan comes along, you do the calculation. $15, $20 per meal times 30, $600. Right up front, the first day of Ramadan, you pay the $600 and then you don't have to fast. You're not accountable. But what would someone do? They would do as I explained. You would just eat small amounts privately and then have your meal at Maghrib with everyone else. Enjoy the environment of fasting, but don't do it if it's going to harm you. If you have to take your pill, take your pill. That's fine. So terminally ill people, this is what they do. And if you don't know what you have is a terminal illness or not, or a chronic illness, I said terminally ill, I should probably instead of chronic, honestly. Probably a bad choice of words. But anything that's chronic or terminal, speak to a physician, speak to an imam, and they'll tell you, they'll advise you whether that's what you've got or not. Because that's very important, because you don't have to fast, but you do owe the kafara sughra, the feeding one person a day for every day. Elderly. Just by the virtue of being elderly. If someone is old and they're a bit weak, they have this option. This is Islamic. This is based on three of the four madhab. It's not something I'm making up. This is what the scholars have talked about in three of the four. So you're allowed to, if someone's old, extremely old, and they're frail and they're weak, they don't have to fast. And their children can pay the kafara on their behalf. Right? They can pay the kafara and they don't have to fast these days anymore. So that's like an advantage of being a senior citizen. So there you go. But I'm talking about elderly. I don't think 65 is elderly unless there's a lot of other problems. but a bit older than that. And that's kind of, again, how do we define elderly? Because it's not an objective measurement, it's not a number. This has to be assessed by two people, a physician and an imam. You need two people involved. You need to get a physician to actually advise, and then an imam to advise. And then in that case, they don't have to fast, but they have to. They owe feeding one person for each day, which is about $600 right up front at the beginning of Ramadan. Or 500 if 15 is enough for a meal. I don't know if 15 is enough for a meal anymore. Those who postpone making up for missed days. Okay, go back to the rule. You're supposed to make up for days before the next Ramadan. You didn't. You still owe the day, but now you pay kafara sughra for those days. So let's say you're behind by 40 days of and you've held them. You don't pay every year. You just pay it once. It's a one-time thing. It's not for every year. Not every year that you don't fast them, you have to pay for the days that you didn't fast. Or you pay it once. If you postpone after Ramadan, then you owe the day and you pay for each day one person. So you just do the calculation, $20 per day, and you pay that at the beginning of Ramadan. So when a pregnant lady or a breastfeeding lady decides to break her fast, is it acceptable for her to break her fast? Yes, it is a legitimate reason to break their fast. They're not doing anything wrong. However, they have to pay kafara for those days. And that's the majority of opinion of scholars. Now here's the good part. The husband has to pay for it. Yes. So the father of the children has to pay for it, not the woman. So sisters, if you're breastfeeding and pregnant, break your fast and let him pay up. And then fast later on in November and December when it's really short and you can do it easily. I still wouldn't advise you to do it, but again, breastfeeding and being pregnant take a toll on a human being's body. So we would not, like I frequently advise sisters, like if you're pregnant and you're breastfeeding, you have the rukhsa. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave you the excuse. It's open for you. Don't tire yourself. There's no point. And don't push yourself to that extent. If you want to fast a few days because you don't want to have 30 days to make up for, that's fine. But don't push yourself. But you owe kafara. It doesn't have to be, even if you make up for the fasting before the next Ramadan, this has nothing to do with when you make up for it. Breaking fast because of pregnancy and breastfeeding, kafara is owed automatically. And that's for the majority of scholars. Again, you'll find some minor opinions here and there that disagree. I'm giving you the majority. When it's over 80%, I give you the consensus just to make life easier for everybody. All right. So some sunan of fasting, some recommended actions of fasting. Any questions about what we talked about so far? I'll allow for maybe two or three questions if there's anything about the invalidators of fasting and the ahkam. Anything? Excellent. Yes. Sorry? Bleeding, if you go back, again, I'll share these slides. If you're confused about what invalidates your fast, you'll go back to the bodies of the slides, you'll find that bleeding is not one of them. Unless it's menstrual bleeding, right? So unless it's that, then normal bleeding does not invalidate your fast. However, if you bleed out a lot and you're getting ill, then you shouldn't fast because of the illness that you have. So that's a different story. But losing blood on its own does not cause you to break your fast. Some scholars have talked about causing intentional bleeding. Some scholars have talked about that, but I don't think that's a very specific problem because that's more self-harm and that's different. But some scholars have talked about that in validating your fast, but not bleeding in general. Okay, so sunnah of fasting, number one, daily and late suhoor. And this is for my younger brothers and sisters specifically, because a lot of them don't like getting up for suhoor. It's a sunnah, get up for suhoor. The Prophet ﷺ, as we'll hear the hadith inshallah at Isha by one of our brothers, he'll talk about suhoor. It's very important. So do it every day and do it late. And it's not a feast, eh? Suhoor is not a feast. Suhoor is simple. Have just something simple. Don't drink 3 gallons of water for suhoor. You don't need it. It's not going to help you. It's just going to put you in the bathroom, like a lot of times, and cause hyponatremia and maybe send you to the emerge. Don't overdrink. It's not going to, well, that makes no difference, honestly. Just don't eat things that are extremely salty. Don't open a bag of Pringles or, Doritos and start wolfing that down. It's going to hurt you. Just have something simple. Some tamar, some water, maybe milk, leban, have a little bit of soup, some fruit, something like that. Don't make it a feast. Again, Ramadan is about lessening our consumption, being a bit more healthy. Try to eat less, try to moderate what you're eating throughout the month. I know we don't talk about this a lot, but I am really bringing this to your attention. Ramadan is about moderating the amount of food we take into our bodies. Ramadan is when we actually follow the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. The human being will never fill a container that is more evil and detrimental to him than his own stomach. And if in kana la budda fa'ilan fa thuluthun li ta'amihi wa thuluthun li sharabihi wa thuluthun li nafsihi, if you have to fill it, then a third for food, a third for liquid, and then a third to allow your lungs to expand and you can breathe. So we want to do this in Ramadan, right? This is the only time for you to do it. So how? You only have two times to eat, basically. Yes. You're bulking? No, it's a good question. I don't think about those things very much. Can we postpone bulking to after Ramadan? Is it possible? I would advise that, maybe. I would advise, let Ramadan cleanse you. Ramadan does bring a system of consumption that is cleansing and purifying of the body. So allow it to do that for you. Again, I don't know. I have to think about that a little bit. Maybe talk to you privately, because I don't know why you're bulking. What the point here is? So there may be like some. I have to know more details and context. But in general, generally speaking, suhoor is not a feast. It's an amount of food to help you get through the day. We worry a lot, so we're chugging down a lot of water, and it's not really doing much. It doesn't. Your body will learn to hold on to liquid after 10 days of Ramadan with you almost not drinking anything. Your body will learn. It's very interesting how the body learns. The body modifies the way it deals with incoming external sources of energy. It'll learn to preserve water because you're not allowing it to, you're fasting for 17 hours a day. It starts to learn after 10, 15 days of it. It starts doing it much better. So you don't have to drink all this water. It's just a psychological trick. You're worried, so you start drinking a lot. You don't have to. So don't make it a feast. And the people who tell me that they have to finish their tahajjud at 3 o'clock and fajr is at 5 because they need to go make suhoor, may Allah forgive you, Wallahi. I don't understand how this. So early fast breaking. Make sure, obviously, I don't have to say daily because everyone's going to break their fast. But the sunnah is you break your fast the moment the adhan goes off. Like the moment he says, Allahu Akbar, you break your fast. Don't wait. There's no ajr in waiting. There's ithm, there's sin in waiting. Saying, I want to, be stronger or fast better. I'm gonna wait until after. No. The sunnah is the moment the imam, the says Allah, you start, you break your fast. You break your fast immediately. Just like suhoor. There's nothing impressive about doing suhoor early because you want to fast longer. No. Have your suhoor right before, like, as close to adhan as possible without, obviously, putting yourself in a compromising situation where you're chewing on something and the adhan goes off. Because if it's chewing on something and the adhan, if fajr goes off, you have to spit it out immediately. Right? You can't keep that in. I mean, children, we can offer some exceptions, but for adults, no, you can't. Once he says Allahu Akbar, there's very little of. I don't know if you ever heard that you can continue to eat until Hayya ala Salah. Ever heard that before? No, this was something we were taught when we were kids. Like, and I thought it was real. And I remember I told it to my sheikh and I was arguing with him, and he started to laugh at the end because he could see I cared about this. I took this like to heart. But no, obviously there's nothing like that. So you have to stop. So breaking fast with moist dates. Dry dates or water? That's the sunnah. The sunnah is either rotab, moist dates. If you don't have those, then dry dates. If you don't have those, then water. That's the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. He broke his fast every day. So my advice to you is have some moist dates in your house so you can follow the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ, where you take moist dates and water. If you don't have moist dates and you have dry dates, then dry dates and water. If you don't have dates at all, then break your fast on water. Don't break your fast on anything else. Break your fast on water. That's the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. And making dua. And I talked about this during the sessions that I shared with you about preparing for Ramadan. We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow, inshallah. But the sunnah is that when you break your fast, you make dua. You can do it before, you can do it right after. There's no big deal. Like, the scholars will differ on this. It's not a problem. Just during, when you're breaking your fast, make dua. This is a really beautiful moment for you to seize the opportunity of speaking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because this is when He's most pleased with you. You actually went through the 17 hours. You just fasted for 17 hours and you're breaking your fast. The time He told you to do it, subhanahu wa ta'ala, in full submission to His will, jalla jalaluhu. It's a beautiful moment for you to speak, and He will give you what you hope for or better. And the last thing is fasting from sin. This is a condition for acceptance, not for validity. I'll repeat that. This is a condition for acceptance, not for validity. If I'm standing by someone and they're staring at haram, do I tell them your fast is invalidated? No. But I'll tell them most likely it's not going to be accepted. And you'd be like, well, what's the difference? Oh, ya Sheikh, if you don't know the difference, then you've missed a lot of important classes within Islam. This is the whole thing. If I was able, I am honest about this. If I knew, wallahi, that one rak'ah or one sajda that I've done in my life is accepted by God, I take off this microphone and I walk right out. And you can take care of yourselves. I know that I'm good. If I know that Allah has accepted one thing from me, one, then I'm good. You can take care of this on your own. Because you know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accepts something from you. When He accepts your deeds, you're good. He'll never take it back. And you'll always make it. But we don't know that anything we've done has been accepted. Not one thing. We hope. We make dua, but we have no idea. There are people, Yawm al-Qiyamah, who will have all of their deeds wrapped up and thrown into them in their faces. There's a hadith in Bukhari of a person whose prayers will be brought to them as dirty laundry and thrown at them. Here, take them back. Take them back. We don't need them. There's nothing in there for us. They're yours. You're welcome to have them. Go and see who else was involved in this deed and see if they'll pay you for it. He says, subhanahu wa ta'ala, أَنَا أَغْنَى الشُّرَكَاءِ عَنِ الشِّرْكِ فَمَنْ عَمِلَ عَمَلًا أَشْرَكَ فِيهِ مَعِي غَيْرِي تَرَكْتُهُ وَشِرْكَهُ. I don't need associates. If you do something for someone else, let the someone else give you the reward. I don't want it. Validity is the technicalities I'm explaining to you today. This is the technicalities of what allows it to be valid, not valid. Acceptance is a whole different ball game. It's a whole different thing. For it to be accepted, you have to fast with excellence. Your eyes and ears and tongue and hands and feet, everything has to be fasting. And you're pushing yourself to those limits of really, if you're holding back from halal, then holding back from haram should be a default. It shouldn't even be a question. So validity and acceptance, two very different things. So when I talk about fasting from sin, I'm talking about for your own sake of acceptance. It doesn't take away the validity. If you curse someone out in Ramadan, you're still fasting. I don't know what the probability of this being accepted is going to be. May Allah accept all of our deeds. Say Ameen. That's all that matters. Why do you think culturally in most of parts of the world after Salah they turn to each other and say Taqabbal Allah? They're asking, may Allah accept from you. It was a reminder scholars used to tell their students to do. Remind yourself, you just prayed. You have no idea if it was accepted. You have no idea if it was accepted. So remind them that may Allah accept. Make dua for them that they get accepted and they'll make dua for you that it got accepted because we have no idea. Because we're praying and we don't know if Allah's accepting. May Allah accept all of our deeds. Allahumma ameen. But that's what I want you to remember. I put that there specifically. I'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow. Taraweeh. Let's talk a little bit about Taraweeh. That was fasting. Let's talk a little bit about Salah and Taraweeh. So the value revolves around the connection, time, and completion of the Quran. That's what the value of Taraweeh is down to. Number of raka'at don't carry really any value. Wallahi, they don't. Why the number of raka'at is not important. I swear to you, my hand to God, wallahi, it has very little importance. Whether you do 8 or 10 or 20 or 23 or 13, or it doesn't make a difference that much. What makes a difference is the time, the commitment, the connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the amount of Quran that's being recited. That's what matters. Commit yourself to something where the Quran will be recited throughout the whole month. Find a masjid close by and do that, and find a voice you can listen to. Honestly, alhamdulillah, in this city, there's at least 5 different masajid that will recite the full Quran throughout the month, with Taraweeh and additional pieces as well. Find someone you can listen to and that you enjoy and commit yourself to that, because that's where the value of Taraweeh is. Honestly, we have some people in this community that have voices that are angelic, to say the least. Yani, you have, wallahi, between Sheikh Lu'ay and Sheikh Abdul Karim, I don't know why we even opened the masajid. We should just go and stand and just... But commit yourself to the time, the connection, and the completion of the Quran, and don't focus too much on the number. Wallah, the number is not that important. It's just not. I know, honestly, this is a problem that's been caused so much agony in our Muslim ummah for so long, of 8 and 20 in the fight. Yeah, jama'ah. Just really, where's your heart? Is it with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Then pray 2, or pray 2,000, or pray whatever works for you. Just make sure that's the... So both at home and in congregation at the masajid are valid options. So if you told me that myself and my wife and my children enjoy praying Taraweeh at home and recite the whole Quran, should we come to a masjid? I don't know what to tell you. It's totally up to you. Both are valid options. Both are very correct. Both are very good. If you're able to keep that up at home and the environment is nice and you're enjoying it and it's something, and a lot of people did that during COVID and they found it to be beautiful, if that's something that works for you, you can continue it. There's really no, I can't really say that coming to a masjid is better. I can't say, Islamically, legally speaking, from an Islamic perspective, Islamically, legally, I can't really tell you, yeah, no, it's better to come to a masjid. If you're able to achieve that, I don't know if it's better. I don't know. I encourage it, especially for the younger people, because we don't live in a Muslim-majority country. So the environment of Ramadan is not available. How our kids are going to love Ramadan is going to be by them coming to masajid. and attending Taraweeh and attending Dua and being a part of Suhoor and the Dars after Fajr and the Dars before Isha and after Asr. And that's how they're going to feel. Ramadan is a special time because they're always in the masjid. There's a social gathering, there's food, there's salah, there's something different from any part of the year. So that's why I would recommend coming to a masjid. But if you're able to achieve that at home with your family, then, you know, both are valid options, and I wouldn't know what to tell you. Again, here we do Isha, then Sunnah, 2 minutes, and then immediately we go for 10 rak'ah of Taraweeh and then 3 of Witr, and we recite the whole Quran, and we have the khatma on the 29th night of Ramadan. Now, the 29th day, the 29th night, so the night before the 29th day is when we have the khatma, which will probably be, a Wednesday or Thursday night, I'm not sure, I think a Thursday night. So that's what we run here. You're welcome to come and attend that with us, inshallah ta'ala. And we do, the volume of recitation per rak'ah is actually reasonable. So Zakat al-Fitr and Eid prayer. Did I put anything after that? Okay, so this is what you need to know. So Zakat al-Fitr, I think this year is still $15 to $20 per person in the family, including fetuses that are 120 days, that are more than 100 days since conception. So if your wife is more than 120 days, which is around 4 months, if your wife is more than 4 months pregnant, then as a man, you owe Zakat al-Fitr. So in a family, a man has to pay for it. If a lady is single, then her father pays for it. And if she has no one, then she pays for herself, obviously. But this is how the things work. The men are responsible for paying for their families. So a father should pay for his children. If his children are married off, then they can do that within their own families. But anyone staying with them, they should pay Zakat al-Fitr for them. And that goes for even babies that have not been born, that are over four months, you should pay for it. So if you have 3 children and a 5-month pregnant wife, then you pay for yourself, your wife, 3 children, and so you pay for 6 people. So $20 for each, that's 120, you pay that out. Now, again, another lovely, lovely fight that we have to have every year is whether it's okay to pay it out through money or does it have to be wheat. And I am of the opinion that it's okay for it to be money. If you're not comfortable with that opinion and you don't think that's valid and you think you have to give it out as wheat or barley, that's fine. You can find people who will take that from you. But Wallahu A'lam, this opinion is very valid and very acceptable within Islamic law. You can just pay the money, and the majority of scholars today are very much in keeping with that. It must be given before Eid prayer. Some say it's okay up to Asr of the day of Eid. Some say very few number, like a very, very small number of scholars. I'm just bringing it up in case somehow you forget or you get caught or you're traveling or something. Some say it's okay to up to Asr. But the vast majority of scholars, it has to be given out before the Eid. When is the best time to start doing it? Last couple of days of Ramadan. Some scholars are okay the last 15 days of Ramadan. Some scholars are okay from the beginning of Ramadan. The more back we go, the less scholars are okay with it. So if you want to do it right, once the last 10 nights of Ramadan enter, prepare your Zakat al-Fitr and pay it out during those last 10 nights of Ramadan. That's the best time to do it. And make sure you calculate appropriately, inshallah ta'ala. So Eid prayer, I'll just end with this and we'll pray. Eid prayer is highly recommended. It's considered to be a fard kifaya. You are obligated to go. Not just you, you're obligated to go yourself, your wife, your children. Back in the day, they used to take their pets with them. They used to take animals with them. They used to take their cats. They used to go with everything. And everyone would go outside, they would go with all their animals, they would pray as a congregation outside. So Eid prayer is highly recommended, if not fard kifaya. So you should definitely attend it. It can be delayed a bit, meaning if it doesn't happen at 7 o'clock in the morning, if it happens 9 or 10 or 11, not a problem. Anytime before dhuhr is actually very much acceptable. All members of society should attend, preferably outdoors, and one community should have one prayer if possible. Now, we've been trying to organize that here. It's not going to happen in London, I don't think. But we will, inshallah, make sure that every year we have a large outdoor Eid, or a large venue for Eid, so that the majority of people can go, and then the small masajid will have smaller Eids running. We will never pray Eid here, ever. As long as I am alive and functional, we will not have Eid prayer in this masjid. So don't ask me the question and don't even think about it. I will be doing Eid in other places or attending outside like everyone else. Eid prayer should be done as congregation, outdoors, or in larger masajid, not in small places. It doesn't serve the purpose. And that's the end of the halaqah, inshallah. What I'll do is after salah, after the khatira, if there are questions, I'll make myself available. If not, then we'll go home, inshallah.